Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. Truly the world's most irreverent, entertaining, and cool internet talk radio station. And this is where we talk about anything and everything to help you get through things in life and just sort of give you support and answer your questions. And of course, we don't have a therapeutic relationship, but you know what I do is I give you suggestions and ideas to help you through life and different things that you need to work on. And as always, I have an amazing guest today, and she's written an awesome book. She's a lovely person, and we're talking about the subject. If you checked out my social media PR information yesterday and this morning. Yeah, the subject is grief. I mean, we have all experienced it. It's a natural response to losing something or someone or anything, for that matter, that's important to us. And, you know, we feel a variety of emotions going on. It's kind of like a roller coaster sometimes. Sadness, loneliness, guilt for feeling good at moments. Gee, I forgot about that person. I forgot that I'm grieving. You know, things like that. And we grieve for a number of different experiences, you know, reasons. Maybe a loved one passed or a relationship ended, or we lose jobs that we loved. Other life changes, chronic illness, or even moving somewhere to where we really don't want to have to move. And we all grieve differently. But if you do understand your emotions, take care of yourself. Use some wonderful tools, like my guest's book that we're going to be talking about, and seek support. We can heal somewhat. But our grieving process depends on a number of things. You know, it depends on our life experience sometimes. Like I said, the severity of the grief that we're dealing with, and everything and everyone is different. So we're going to be talking about that today in an amazing book, and my on-air guest today. And she is an expert on grief. And many other things for that matter. Her name is Debbie Augenthaler, and her latest book, I'm holding it in my hands here. I've read it, and it's wonderful. It's called You Are Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope. And Debbie has specialized in trauma, grief, and loss, interweaving Eastern philosophy, energy healing, and spiritual practices from cultures all around the world. And she is a psychotherapist in private practice in New York City. And, you know, she's just really helping everyone through their grief, no matter what it is, in her book, and shares her experience, which I can't even imagine going through that. But it has to do with the loss of her husband, and I'll help Debbie share more information about that with you and her book and how she can sort of help normalize common feelings and experiences for everybody who's grieving. She helps us kind of hold space for each of us to experience our own grief in our own way and time. And let's get some help right now. Have her support us a little bit. Debbie, thank you so much for being here on the couch with me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Michelle, for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
No, it's great to have you. And, you know, this book you wrote, one of the best books I've read on grief. I mean, truly, truly. It's a gentle kind of walking through different experiences that you had and sharing what you experienced. And also, you know, some of the tools that you offer. And they're really lovely to think about, a lot of things that we need to think about while we're going through the grief process, no matter what it was, you know, that we've lost. Mm-hmm. Can you just share a little bit more? Oh, sure, Debbie. Can you share a little bit more about why you wrote this book specifically?
Well, I wrote it specifically, you know, grief, as you were just saying in the intro, it's universal, but, you know, no one's born knowing how to cope with it. And like you said, how we grieve is based on so many different factors, right, that have happened in our life. But when you have a big life-altering loss, you really don't know how to cope. And in my own, and from my own experience, which I know we'll discuss shortly, but and from working one-on-one with people when they're grieving, they do feel like they're alone. What they're experiencing, and they can, you know, often can feel like they're going crazy. And I've just had so many people who coming into my office, and also friends and family, like that were saying, is this normal? This is happening to me? And when I am with someone and say that this is a natural, normal, you know, experience to be having or feeling to be having, or it's not, a lot of people feel that way. There's you can sense the energy shift, like in the room. They can see the relief flood over through their body. Like they're like, you mean I'm not the only one? So I wanted to help more people than I could one-on-one in my therapy practice, because the more I thought about it, it's like if I could write about some universal experiences, meaning not that everyone will have every one of them, but common experiences happen. And by sharing my own story and the those experiences, because it helps people to read other people's stories, and it helps people heal and cope, and we all like to read. I think read stories really matter. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Absolutely. No. It's. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Debbie.
I wrote the book essentially. I wish I had when my husband died, because I wanted to know that somebody got what I was feeling. I didn't want to read somebody who told me what I should be feeling or doing, or anything that was too dense or clinical. And I just wanted to know that I wasn't the only one. So that's why I called the book that. And that's really why I wrote the book, because I wanted to help more people than I can one-on-one.
Yes.
And I feel like by sharing my own experience, it just helped to show people that I get it and I'm there with you.
Sure. And it's lovely, and it's well written, and it's a comfortable read as well. Not any deep psychological theory here. A lot of people say, I don't want a self-help book that's good. No, this is lovely as you sort of unfold your own story and the way you dealt with your own grief. And as a matter of fact, can you share your story and my condolences for your loss, sweetheart, about what happened to your husband? He was very young. You were very young. So
we were very young, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And it isn't always this traumatic for everybody, but I feel that, you know, when you lose somebody suddenly and unexpectedly, there's just an added dimension of shock. But any kind of big loss like this, any life-altering loss, is shattering. But when Jim died, I was with him, and he had been, he was healthy. And he felt this discomfort that we thought might be heartburn. It was early in the morning. We'd just woken up. And I was like, let's go to the hospital, because we didn't know. And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Right.
And like 2 minutes later, he just said, I feel dizzy.
Oh, boy.
And he fell backwards on the bed. And I didn't know it at the moment, but it turned out he died instantly of an aortic aneurysm that he had that no one had detected. And he was dead, but I didn't know it. And so I called 911, and the paramedics came. And it was just very, very, just a very traumatic thing.
Oh, my goodness, Debbie. I'm so sorry. And, you know, I was reading here, your husband, as you mentioned, had been healthy and vibrant, and the doctors compared the probability of his passing by heart attack to being struck by lightning. I mean, that's how rare it was.
It was very rare. And they said there was nothing, you know, that I could have done at all. There's nothing they could have done, even if he'd been in the hospital. So it was one of those things, you know, and it does happen. It's, it, it, like people can have things like that that are undetected. I mean, I know we've all read stories of even young, you know, much younger people than he was, and, you know, teenagers playing track and field that suddenly drop, you know, they die of a heart attack because there's something undetected in their heart that nothing can pick up.
Yes. So. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, just, you know, jumping ahead a little bit, because you did mention it, you know, sometimes there is nothing we can do. And I think that we all have that feeling of maybe I should have, or he should have gone to the doctor earlier, had an EKG, or he should, or I should have known that he was weaker. Or no, I mean, there are certain situations where, you know, we just can't. But in our minds, we're trying to find justification for why this happened. And, you know, so.
Right. Because you're always looking for just fake meaning, right?
Sure.
I call them the what ifs and if only.
Oh, my goodness.
That running loop.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk in a little bit about what you suggest as to how people can be a little more gentle to themselves and manage, you know, those racing or those loop racing thoughts, you know. But we all have heard about the stages of grief, and Dr. Kubler-Ross and many other experts have helped us sort of understand all the stages of grief that we go through.
Right.
And, you know, even when we have other losses in our lives, and, you know, of course, Debbie, you are sharing your particular story in this book about the loss of your husband. But I mean, as you know, everyone, there's different forms of grief, whatever it is, as I said at the top of the show. But anyway,
there absolutely is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But some of the stages that Dr. Kubler-Ross mentions is denial and anger and depression. Maybe you can share with some people those stages and what they mean and what sort of what to expect when there's a major loss.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I always like to say right up front with anyone is you can't compare grief, right? Because someone can say, well, this happened, but you know, but my, that you, yours is only a divorce, or it's only you lost your job. I mean, you're the worst grief experience you've ever had is the worst grief experience you've ever had, right? What's the worst thing that ever happened to you? Well, that's all you can imagine. And so never compare grief, because it's a unique experience, and there's grieving that can go with many things, but all grief experiences share similar kinds of things, right? No matter what it is. And so my book, even though it's about my husband's passing and about the loss of someone you love, it can be any, for any life-altering kind of loss.
Oh,
and again, it can be applied to anything, as you said before, that can cause your life to shift in a way that you weren't expecting, right?
Absolutely.
So I call, they call them the stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Mm.
But I like to think of them as phases,
right?
Because grief, I think this is so important, grief is not linear. It's not a linear process from one stage to the next to the next.
Mm-hmm.
We go back and forth between these stages as we heal. As we've healed, it can be 10 years later, and sometimes something can happen, be it an anniversary or something that maybe is especially significant, and it can bring you right back where you feel a fresh wave of grief, and that's okay. I mean, you'll bounce back usually, because by then you've got, you know, resilience, but I think it's important there are phases.
Right.
It's not linear. There's no timetable, and if someone tells you, you know, you should be here, you should be there, you don't let anyone tell you how to grieve, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not linear. It's not, there's no rule book. So we all grieve in our own way, in our own time. As far as what each one is, the denial is like, you know, from my experience, with Jim, but not just my experience, the universal, we all live in denial every day, as you know, Dr. Michelle, right? It's a great defense mechanism. I don't think any of us could like walk outside of the house if we didn't live in a little bit of denial.
Exactly.
Right?
It's called survival, isn't it, Debbie? Yeah.
So denial in the beginning is just, it's the inability to really take in that this has happened.
Yeah.
You just can't believe it's happened. And even, you know, for sudden loss, especially your psyche, you can't believe it's happened. So that's why people they'll ruminate and go over and over and over what happened and how it happened. And they'll want to tell the story over and over because they just can't you can't accept the fact that it's happened.
Right.
You're in disbelief.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
and you want to deny it. This cannot be true. I cannot, this cannot happen.
Right.
And then anger is a very natural. And I think it's, I know I've had clients who felt really guilty because right. they're really angry that this happened, or they're angry at the person who died. Like, how could you leave me?
Right.
And I went through that too. I felt that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that way. I don't remember if it was the first day or the first week. I'm sure I was like, wait, but then I would feel guilty. And I, it was one of those things.
Right.
But it's a natural, natural response.
Is it?
So
yeah.
I think, I'm sorry.
No, it's so true. It's so true.
Yeah.
And I think, and we're also, sometimes I've experienced people and myself personally, you're not only angry at that person, but we're not thinking rationally. I mean, you know, at the time
That's
we can't
right.
say, well, gosh, he was so young and he couldn't help it. But we're angry at God if we have a spiritual,
That's right.
belief system mm-hmm. and maybe angry mm-hmm. at ourselves for not doing or really making sure that they were okay or help. There's so many different forms of anger, isn't there, Deb?
That, yes, that's such a good point. It's an excellent point. And I'm glad that you pulled that out of it because it's,
yeah.
I was angry at God. I was angry at myself. Like,
yeah.
why couldn't I have known this,
Right.
And so that can lead into bargaining is that like I was really angry with God and at times with Jim and everything. And I was bargaining like, I'll do this. If only, you start bargaining, like maybe if I do this, if I do that, it will get better. He'll come back. I mean, cause you're still in that.
Right.
That stage that Joan Didion, I think I referenced it in the book. She wrote a book called The Year of Magical Thinking.
Mm.
And you do have, I think it's another natural response. You just, if I wish it hard enough, if I do just everything perfect, I promise I'll do everything in the rest of my life to be the best human being on this planet. If only.
Yes.
And so there is that phase, like, what can I do to make it go back? And I call it, since you've read the book, I call it the world of before and the world of after.
Right.
And you'll go through this mental process where it's like, I will do anything to go back to the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to do?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
But and again, I think it is. You're right, Debbie. It's our brains not making sense. There's that cognitive dissonance. We're just not connecting with the reality yet. It's not quite there.
Right.
Until
right.
we actually...
And it's a natural...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry,
I'm sorry.
It's a natural physiological response.
Yeah.
Our prefrontal cortex, the thinking and logical part of our brain, shuts down. Because when we are in a state of shock or high anxiety or, huge sorrow, huge grief, our brain itself, we're only reacting. We're really, our body's in a state of like a survival mode, which is a basic instinct that we're born with.
Yes.
And when that happens, the part of your brain that is logical and thinking is really shut down because you're just trying to survive.
Sure.
And your body interprets it as though you're in danger or, because as we all know, high anxiety, right? The racing heart and that terrible feeling of just responding and feeling and not even being able to think clearly.
Yeah.
And that's something else I also let clients know, that it's very natural and normal to feel like this. It's a physiological response to something overwhelming, and it's okay.
Okay.
To be easy with yourself, to remind yourself, to take a deep breath, to be as kind to yourself as you can. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't judge it.
Yes, exactly. And that's, it's difficult to do, but I mean, with, guidance through your book and the kindness and the way you write, Debbie, it's lovely. It really is. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and I'm speaking to psychotherapist Debbie Ogden-Thaler, and she's an amazing author and a specialist, of course. She's been working with her own private practice as a psychotherapist in New York City. And she experienced grief when her husband suddenly passed away in her arms, very young.
Yeah.
And it was one of those shocking situations. But in this book, You Are Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope, she really shares her experiences and sort of an idea of what to expect and sort of there's no fine line of exactly what you're going to go through. It's just very personal on everyone's, just sort of emotional roller coaster. So it's a great guidebook though. And you do empower people a lot with some lovely wisdom, in your book, And especially when you help them begin to navigate the labyrinth of loss. I mean, that is heavy. that's a heavy one.
Yes.
So, but guys, pick this book up. And by the way, you can get Debbie's book at debbieaugenthaler.com, and I'll spell that for you. It's debbieaugenthaler.com, and find out more about Debbie and her practice and her expertise. She's been doing this a long time, and she knows exactly how to help. If you guys want to write, I'm not taking calls today. I've decided to get emails because I really want to help a lot of listeners out there, you know, just on a general basis with some of the stages, of course, that we've been talking about. We're going to follow up on some of those as well. And, you know, also just sort of think about and be mindful of some of the experiences you went through, guys, and sort of how you're relating to this. But if you'd like to email me, please feel free to do so. straighttalkdoc@gmail.com comes right here into the station. straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And if you have any questions or comments, you want to share your story, that's lovely. We can do that on the air as well. So, Debbie, we've gone through, let's see, denial and anger and bargaining.
Right.
And we have
sort of
two more phases. What are those?
Well, there's two. The depression and acceptance are generally, like, those are the top five, right? Those are Kubler-Ross's five stages.
Yes.
And so depression is once you have to face the inevitable, that denial, anger, and bargaining is not going to change what's happened, and you are in the world of after.
Yeah.
There's to feel depressed is also a very common experience. And depression is more than just sadness.
Oh,
it's really feeling, for me, and I talk about it in my book, and I think it's important to recognize, is that I felt hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
I felt hopeless. And that's another reason I wrote the book, is I hope that the book can be, I mean, I was extremely lucky that I had a very wide loving support group of people.
Yes.
I went for therapy because it was so overwhelming, and my therapist, and that's why I became a therapist. I was in a different business.
That's
and
interesting.
She helped me so much that I wanted to help someone like she helped. Like, I wanted to help people like she helped me.
Oh, that's amazing. You had a very successful career in the financial industry for over 20 years, Debbie. And so that's an amazing transition and something that you went through and learned. And my goodness, you know, you talk about a purpose in life. Right.
Well, right. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. It's probably for not exactly in this moment, but, you know, we often want to make meaning out of loss and out of our grief. And so I have, and I feel, but to go back to like the beginning when I felt helpless, like I did, because not everybody may have, you can have a wide network of support.
Right.
You can have a wonderful therapist, but you can still feel very hopeless. And I just wanted to acknowledge that even in the darkest time, it will pass. It will pass. And so I wanted my book to show that this can happen and you can feel very depressed. And it doesn't mean you'll be depressed forever. It doesn't mean that you are, you know, you'll always be this way. You won't always feel this way. Mm-hmm. But it is part of it, because then that leads to acceptance, right? And so even though grief is not linear, like I said, these are the five like phases. And here's the thing that's important to know, is that when you do get to acceptance, quote unquote, when you feel that, that may be fine until, like I write in the book, I was walking into Penn Station one day and I thought I saw Jim.
Yes.
And my heart leapt up and I'm like, I knew it. I knew he wouldn't leave me.
Wow.
So there I was, right back in denial, right?
Right.
And it was like it was months and months later.
Right.
And so then when I realized, of course, it wasn't him, but you know, your brain, you can go right back to the beginning. This is what I mean when I say we shift back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so then here I was in denial. I knew he wouldn't leave me. And then when it wasn't him, I was angry. And I put the whole thing all over again. So,
right. You're back into the cycle. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, Debbie. And, you know, when we finally can get to acceptance sometimes, and again, like you said, it's not the final frontier. We'll pop back and forth in and out of feelings for a long time and maybe forever. But hopefully throughout time, you know, that depth of the feeling gets a little less painful.
Yes.
But I think one of the myths that we have, and it comes with that sort of acceptance phase, is, oh, moving on with your life means forgetting about that person. And it's not true. Mm-hmm. It's not true, right?
That's totally not true. It is not true. And I think, it, you know, that's something, too, that I really would love to bring into, like, the conversation of the world is is in the subject of grief, at least in our society, because we are a grief-phobic society, and people don't want to talk about it. And one of them is, but it's because, you know, the way grief is handled, loss is handled nowadays, is different than how it was 100 years ago, where when somebody died, it was often in the home, and everybody saw it, and but now it's people don't really, they if you've not been through it, there's just this misconception. I call it like this unwritten societal rule book. Like I never saw the book. I missed it. Like I remember feeling like, am I doing something wrong? You know?
Right. Exactly. No, I hear you.
I feel that, we need to be able to talk about it. And there are, this is one of the misconceptions is that once you heal, you let go of it or you get over it. And it's not like that. I mean, when you know, grief is the price we pay for love. Queen Elizabeth said that. So, you know, when you've loved someone and you've been loved well, there is grief, but that means you've had that and you will always have that. Mm-hmm. Love doesn't die.
No.
Love always, it lives. That's love lives on. And I believe spirit lives on, but the love in your heart that you had, you will always have that. And anybody who's been through it will understand. If any listeners out there hear that, they know what I mean.
Right.
And if you haven't, that's what that means. It doesn't mean beginning to adjust and heal to your new life doesn't mean letting go of the person you love. There is a continuing bond of love.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think it's really important that people understand, that know that. You know?
Yes, exactly. I agree. Oftentimes I find myself talking to the ones I've lost in my life, just talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having these wonderful conversations and gosh, I don't know. You know, you mentioned your belief in the fact that the spirit goes on, and I believe that, and I think many of us want to believe that. And you briefly mentioned the near-death experiences as well. Can you kind of share more about your belief system and a little bit more about the sort of NDEs, as we call them?
Well, I shared the NDEs because I know, you know, many people and many people have talked about them and you read about them, but it's funny, like people, there are a lot of books out there, as I mentioned in my book, like by Evan Alexander, who was a neurosurgeon who didn't have that spiritual belief at all until he did have an NDE, and Anita Murshani, who a lot of people have heard of.
Right.
But in my own life, somebody I'm very close to, my aunt, had she died for a minute or two and met with love and peace. And of course, and I write this in the book, like I went, was like, oh, is Jim there? You know?
Yeah.
Because of course she's still like, I want to know, you know, but she said it wasn't like that, but there was this feeling of extreme peace and love and blissfulness.
Yes.
And, I feel that it was important to share that because I think it's comforting to know that anyone that, you know, who we've loved who's passed is met with that love and that peace. And that we, when it comes to our time, will be met with that also.
Yes.
Because people are afraid of it. People don't want to talk about it. But, you know, death is part of life. I mean, it just is.
It is.
And I think, and I feel, I have a lot of clients that are very afraid of it. And I just wanted to put that out there, that I like to think that, you know, that's how, what Jim, when he passed, that's what met him. And that when I passed, that's what happens too. And I've heard enough about it from many people and read enough about it that I thought it was important to include in the book.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important as well. And you know, as you have, I know several people who've been clinically dead, I mean, you know, and have described to me those experiences. And these people are not, I don't know how to put this without sounding inappropriate, but I mean, they're not spiritual fanatics and they're, you know, not, I mean, very grounded sort of, you know, practical type people who
right.
would not even think of this and said, oh my gosh, I saw this. And it's a very similar, saw this kind of bright light and this feeling of peacefulness. And I truly did not want to go back. I was feeling so great that this sort of energy, I don't know what it was, they all described to me, but it was almost like a voice, but it wasn't a physical voice, but you know, said, you're not, right. you're not ready. Go. You cannot come here yet. So there's sort of a disappointment.
Right. Right. I think that's why I put in like Evan Alexander's book, because he was a neurosurgeon who did not believe but think of it this way too. You know, it's a scientific law of science. Like the law of conservation.
Yes.
Energy. Yes. Doesn't end.
Yes.
It just transmutes.
That's
and
true.
So when you think of it that way, like I like to think of it that way for mm-hmm. people that might be like, I just, you know, and I respect anybody's belief. But for me, I just wanted to show in the book that I had my own alongside when we have these events in our lives, these, you know, huge events, life altering events where it's like the hero's journey, right? Or the
right.
phoenix rising from the ashes. There's always like you go through this dark thing and then you rise up and
right.
and in the sense that you things can shift and you can learn and there are gifts that come.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you would wish that it would ever happen,
yeah,
but
sure.
there are gifts that come.
Right.
And it can often be the gift can be, you know, just this awareness and growth in your own sense of spirituality and connectedness in the world
yeah.
and beyond.
Yeah.
And then leading you want to having great compassion and ability to help others, the desire to help others who've
yeah.
been, you know, by even just helping one person, how many other people will you help in the world? You'll never know, but the ripple effect can be, who knows, endless. We just don't know, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's that idea that if you can make meaning out of something like that. So for me, anyway, to get back to the original thing that you had asked about, the spiritual belief, and
yes.
I just believe that love doesn't die, that spirit doesn't die, that mm-hmm. energy just transmutes.
Oh, I so agree with you, you know, on that. By the way, guys, if you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest here. She's an amazing author. She's written a beautiful book about grieving, sharing her own stories, and many tools to help you get through your losses, no matter what they are. The book's called You're Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope. And it's Debbie Ogden Thaler, and she is a practicing psychotherapist in New York City, has a thriving practice. And also, if you go onto her website, which is her name, it's Debbie Ogden Thaler, and we'll spell you that again in a little bit. You can find out more about her, get her book, and also I like your little toolbox, Debbie. I love that, the little toolbox
you.
Of you know things that you can give others to, you know, get through different kinds. It's not only dealing with grief, but it's dealing with other, you know, situations in life, anxiety and stress, and it's really lovely and helpful. So check her out and pick up the book, guys, because it's really good. Something that came in, and this looks like, yeah, this is from Lisa, and she wrote us, and I think this is really great right now, because I just wanted to throw it out there. On straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, Lisa wrote a little bit ago, and she said, I'm a middle-aged person, and I'm very lonely. I lost my husband to a sudden heart attack as well. But I'm feeling lonely, not only because I miss him, but a lot of my friends and family have pulled away. What is going on? So that's kind of heavy, because I think, did you experience that as well? That some people just sort of went through the grief process for a little bit with you, and then they kind of went on with their lives, right? They just sort of...
Okay. I did. I have a whole chapter about that. It's called Crossing the Street. And I just briefly, I wrote about one day when I was walking in our little town and saw somebody that was a close friend of ours see me. And he turned the other way and walked away thinking I hadn't seen him.
Oh.
And it's because, I know. And you have to remember that it's not about you. It's about them.
Right.
I think that for often... It's almost like, again, to echo back to what I said earlier about grief-phobic society, there's this, it's almost like a fear of grief, that grief is like a disease you can catch. Mm. And I know I felt that way. I felt like, do I, like, because after a few months go by, like you're still in it. Like everything's changed for you. And when people see you,
right,
you remind them that life does not go continue indefinitely in this normal thing, and that what happened to you can happen to them.
Right.
And they're uncomfortable with your grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it either can remind them of their own grief they felt, if they were, if, like for Lisa, if they were particularly close to her husband, it could remind them of their own grief. And because they don't have to live it every day, they're like, oh, I don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it can be, it's hard, or it's hard to face our own mortality.
Sure.
When I was talking about, you know, people with fear of death, it's hard. People don't want to have to think about it.
That's
so when
true.
They see you, you represent to them what their worst fear could be.
Yes. Exactly. That makes so much sense, Debbie. It really does.
It doesn't make it easy for for Lisa. I understand. And I mean, so what I would do, and I would say to Lisa to answer that is like, even if you have one person, like go to the, like find a person, and if it's not a friend or a family member, it could be a pastor or a rabbi or who, you know, anything like that. If you can, therapy is available to you, I highly recommend it. But that person that can listen to you and support you, because that's something that's an important message for me. It's not about you. It's about them. People will often do or say inappropriate or hurtful things.
Sure.
And it's because they don't know what to say or they're uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And let people help you.
Yes.
So just find that person that will, who will listen and be supportive.
Exactly. Exactly. And there are, like you said, Debbie, there are people, they just, they don't know how to handle it or what to say, and they don't want to hurt you. I think, and they're also coming from within their own grief and their inability maybe to realize it and to sort of grapple with the reality of what's going on as well. So it does get awkward even with some of the closest family members. You know, we don't quite know what to expect.
Yep.
And Lisa, thank you so much for emailing us. That was lovely. And again, you can pick up Debbie's book on her website. And we'll be giving that out. It's DebbieOgenThaler.com. It's called You're Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope. We'll give you more information about that in just a little bit at the end of the show. We were talking about, you know, having a more of a spiritual sort of, viewpoint that helps us through grieving sometimes. And you also emphasized the importance of us sort of having rites or rituals in order to help us grieve. And it doesn't mean, you know, as you said, that we, you know, have to belong to, although it does help, I must say, to a particular religion or belief system. What are some of the rituals that you performed, and why are they so important to us?
Well, rituals offer comfort, and they offer connection to our loved one, right? They offer the connection still to a loved one. So, like, for instance, they offer comfort, a connection, and a path to healing. They're a way of honoring and connecting with your loved one, right? You can, because again, the continuing bond of love, love doesn't die, it doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding a ritual that helps you feel connected in that way is so comforting and so healing. And I mean, it can be as simple as wearing something, like I wore one of Jim's t-shirts for a long time, and I just, that made me feel good. I so find whatever feels comforting to you. I kept all the cards, and I just want to put this out there for anybody that's listening that maybe knows someone who's grieving and you want to help them. Really send that card, send that letter, or send an email, or call them up and let people know, you know, how, like, if you have a story to tell them about their person they love, that, you know, they mean a lot, that connection. And so, you know, I would go through cards, or I would go through cards that Jim had written me that I had saved. But anything like that that just helps you to feel connected. I would light a candle. I bought a candle specifically for that, and I would sit there in the dark. I know it sounds a little melodramatic, but it helped me.
Sure.
I played music that we liked, that he and I both liked, and I would light the candle. And I would feel like it would just, you know, it was like a way of communing with him, of just honoring him, but feeling connected to him. And of course, in my book, I write about, you know, I went to the cemetery every week for a long time, because it you know, in those first few months, again, it was just still so hard to accept.
Yes.
And believe that it had happened. And like, it's almost like I had to go to be there and like, this is the truth. This is what's going on.
Yes.
But it was a ritual though. It became like a thing that I did. And then, but there's so many things that you can do. Mm-hmm. And it could be as easy as, I shouldn't say as easy, but you know, you can, your loved one, like if you like gardening together,
yes.
you can continue doing their garden.
Yes.
You can, find like go to a favorite maybe beach or some place like that, and then just like there might be a rock, and it sounds a stone,
yes.
right? But something that's from some place that's meaningful to
right.
you that the two of you shared, and
exactly.
you can carry that with you.
Mm.
It just helps you to feel connected. Look
yes.
for signs. Look for all that stuff.
Yes, and I think sometimes when we're open to it and we ask whoever, you know, our higher power, whoever that is, you know, possibly
mm-hmm.
or that person to just sort of connect with us and know that we're open to, if they're ready to show us signs, or, you know, we're open
mm-hmm.
to anything out there. And it is meaningful for us sometimes. Maybe they aren't that person trying to communicate or whatever, but at least there are certain things that we give us a glimmer of, wow, that was pretty amazing what I just saw or experienced. Or, you know, that butterfly that I've never seen in my backyard just came and landed on my finger. What was that about? You know, little things like that.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and that can offer great comfort. I mean, one of the things for me is a white butterfly, and it's not just for Jen, it's
really?
Also for my
yeah.
Cousin Judy, who died of breast cancer. And seeing that, I was in Arizona in the desert last year, and I saw two
yes.
white butterflies.
Oh.
I'm not making this up. And I'm just,
no.
to me, that was like, oh, hello, you know,
yeah.
and but it brings comfort,
yeah, it really
you know,
does.
And it can be anything like that. It could be a special song. It could be a scent. I mean, you know, I think we've all heard of stories where people are like, I smelled, you know, her perfume and
yes.
or that type of a thing. And it's very comforting.
Yes.
And so be open to that. And I do, like my cousin's daughter died at 14 of
wow.
cancer. But they Lars ended up, you know, they started a grief center and her in
oh,
honor of her.
That's
and
lovely.
Now it's become this place that, and it's in Tulsa, and it's become this place where for the whole community,
yes.
that's where they go when people, and they have grief support groups, and they offer counseling, and they have things for kids, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Mm.
Anyway, there's a lot of rituals, there's a lot of things that you can do to honor your loved one that help you stay connected, and just being
yeah.
in nature, and like you said, the butterfly or the hummingbird, and
yeah.
The wind, the
yes.
trees, like just being in nature can be very soothing, healing, and connecting.
Yes, I agree. Really connecting. And, you know, take time to pause, folks, and be mindful of your feelings and thoughts, and, you know, meditate. And you can meditate however you'd like. There's no any particular perfect way to do it. It's just quieting our minds and allowing, you know, peace. It's still those thoughts that are always, you know, going through our minds. We're ruminating, or we're perseverating, or whatever it is, on something. But,
right.
You know, just allowing
That's
us
right.
to heal. You know, yeah, we were talking about, you know, some of the myths, you know, a little bit earlier. Some people, and I wanted to just touch on this briefly before our, you know, little interview here is up, because some people say moving on with your life means that you're forgetting about your loss. And that's a big myth, because you talk also in your book about sort of becoming ready to get out there in the world after your loss of socializing
uh-huh.
or, you know, possibly dating. So
right.
What were some of the turning points for you which helped you realize that you were sort of ready to possibly get out there in the world and start socializing again?
Well, it did take me a while, and
yeah.
I put on my quote face of you know, trying to be like stoic. I think it's one more thing I just want to add quickly is it's
sure.
okay to be a griever. It's okay to not be okay, and be kind and compassionate towards yourself.
Yes.
It's so important, because I was hard on myself.
Mm.
I felt like I had to be strong, and I wonder if sometimes if that didn't prolong that morning, the period where I wasn't ready, because I was in this constant, like, I'm okay. Right. And then really I'm not okay, but I would go home and, you know, that was my refuge, like to be able to let it out.
Exactly.
And so that's important. Yeah. But when I noticed the shift is that, well, I became more resilient when I would have a quote, I'll use the word meltdown for lack of a better word, but when something would reduce me to a puddle, I was like, well,
exactly.
I don't want to do this. I can't do this.
Right.
It wouldn't last. You know, it wouldn't last for days and days. It would last for maybe overnight, and I would feel better the next day because I was building resilience, and I knew that I was going to, you know, not always feel like this. And so I began to notice that I was healing. But what I did is I gave myself the time that I needed to, quote, cocoon.
Right.
I gave myself. But, and I want to emphasize, it's different for everybody. I wasn't ready for a couple of years. Some people will be ready after a couple of months. It's whatever is right for you.
No,
you will
judgment.
Know it.
Yes.
And the way I knew it was to suddenly wake up and like start find myself laughing again.
Yes.
Find myself saying yes to and wanting to, you know, and realizing I had just really had an enjoyable day or evening.
Yes.
And then having a little bit of like, but wait, how can I be feeling good again? You know.
Right.
And so it was this kind of back and forth and but like appreciating a nice day. And I realized I was ready to meet somebody. I was ready to you know, start dating again.
Sure.
And I first started just engaging, you know, with friends and being social, which those were my baby steps. And every step is take every little step as it comes. Don't make yourself take big leaps and bounds because you feel pressured. You have to do it. And you'll know if like Dr. Michelle said, if you're quiet, you take a few minutes to be alone with your feelings, to be in touch with yourself. You'll know what you're ready for and when you're ready for it, and it's okay. And so that's why I write about that too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Beautifully said, Debbie. Well, it's about that time. My gosh, it's gone so quickly talking with you, and you've helped so much. I think a lot of people really can listen to this show again. It's up in the archives as soon as we get off the air, folks. So if you missed something, go back and listen to the show because you're going to get a lot of help. And my special guest again, Debbie Ogden-Thaler. Her book is You Are Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope. And like I said, the show will be up in the archives. Listen again. And all the information about how to find out about Debbie and pick up her book and her website, which is DebbieOgdenThaler.com. And I'll give you the correct spelling, folks. That'll be up there as well. Debbie, thank you so much for being here with us. You're super. You're just a lovely person. And I thank you so much for your experiences that you've shared.
Thank you so much, Dr. Michelle, for having me. I really enjoyed this, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about all of this because it's so important.
Oh, it
so
is.
Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And take good care, and we'll, of course, talk again, I know. All right.
Oh, good. I hope so. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now. All right, guys. It's a great book. Sorry, just cut Debbie off there. And it's You're Not Alone, A Heartfelt Guide for Grief, Healing, and Hope. And there is a lot of hope in that. And her book is a sort of a step-by-step, you know, just a helpful way to help you get through losses, no matter what kinds of losses you've had. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean to be the passing of a loved one, but we can lose a job, or, you know, we can lose a relationship, we can lose our houses, whatever it is that we're connected to. You know, so it helps you get stronger and more resilient and get through your own stages in your own time. All right. Do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people. That's what I always say. Dr. Michelle Cohen here, and I'll be back next week with more great help on the couch. Have a good week. Bye-bye now.